The argued case is number 212221, McHatem against the Department of Veterans Affairs. Mr. Rostin.
May I proceed? Thank you for considering the appeal of my client, Nafisi Mogadam, a dedicated licensed physician assistant employed by the VA at its Los Angeles campus. Ms. Mogadam's appeal is an important case for federal whistleblowers.
Okay, Counselor, if you were to win today, what is it that you expect to gain? What's the relief that you're seeking?
Well, I would say two things to answer that. One with regards to what my client is seeking and then what she is also entitled to. So for my client, it's very important that she is acknowledged as a whistleblower and that she received corrective action with regards to the fact that she was a whistleblower and that this contributed to her removal, even though she has since been internally.
Okay, I understand what's arguments are. What is it that you're seeking? What's the relief that you're seeking?
The relief that we're seeking is, one, that she is deemed a whistleblower and that she receives corrective action that her removal was due to her whistleblowing. Secondly, she is seeking to go forward with an evidentiary hearing with relation to compensatory damages related to that finding.
So it's compensatory damages. That's the relief.
Correct.
Is there any other thing that... Is that it? Just compensatory damages?
Well, compensatory damages, as set forth in the amendment to the WPA in 2012, that is correct.
Okay, your client is working, right?
She is.
Reinstated and it's working. So the only thing you're looking for is compensatory damages. Did you argue for compensatory damages below?
In the below case, there would have been a claim for compensatory damages had there been a finding of jurisdiction based on whistleblowing. And I'll also remind the court that the fact that she was seeking corrective action was never challenged until it got to this federal circuit. The VA never made any issue of the fact that she was seeking jurisdiction. The judge never did either.
I'm asking because it looks like you already won the case. She's been reinstated. And I'm leery whether there's anything else here. On your assertion for compensatory damages, it appears to me that was not properly argued below, and we don't have jurisdiction over that particular issue.
Our position is that she would be making the claim for damages once there was a finding of jurisdiction, and we do think that it's important that there is a finding of jurisdiction in this case because She still is employed by the VA. She still is a whistleblower, and this issue has never been adjudicated. And I'd like to make some points that were not brought up in our briefing in response to the agency's citing to the Tunick case.
That's what your gray brief is for, right?
Mm-hmm.
The government raises whatever issues it raises in its red brief, and then you have an opportunity to reply in your gray brief.
Well, we did reply in the brief along the lines of what I'm saying right now is that once she's seeking compensatory damages and
I know I guess I'm cutting you off at the pass when you said you want to talk about some additional points that you didn't raise in your gray brief.
We didn't raise those issues because we've already set forth clear that she wants to have corrective action on the grounds that she's a whistleblower and that she's entitled to compensatory
damages. Yeah, I guess that's the question, corrective action. What is the action that she's looking for? Is she back in her position? I guess the answer is yes. She's employed again with the VA, right? And then secondly, typically there's issues of back pay. And as far as we can tell, she has received all her various back pay.
But that is an issue she denies and something that she would have set forth more clearly had there been an evidentiary hearing on her compensatory damages.
There was no hearing or exploration on compensatory damages because it was just something that was never identified below. The only thing that was identified below, as far as I can tell, in terms of a corrective action was back pay for March to April 2018, and then that was found by the AJ to not have been proven. And then you haven't appealed that section of the AJ's decision. So now I guess that's why this court is in a bit of a quandary to try to understand what is the basis for the case or controversy, what is the basis for the corrective action, other than, I understand, the general broad desire to be recognized as a whistleblower. But in terms of corrective action, I'm not sure what the actual relief it is that you're coming to this court for.
I apologize to interrupt. The corrective action that we're here for is for there to be a decision, not that the internal finding was that there was insufficient evidence to support her termination and removal, but that there actually was more than that there actually was retaliation against her, that she was a whistleblower, and given the strong public policy for whistleblowing, it is our position that she wants to be deemed a whistleblower and have the corrective action saying you were terminated because of your whistleblower. And I could give some more context as to why she's here and why she's pursuing this appeal so vigorously, is that she was ordered to be returned to work 4 years ago and to be given full autonomy. To date, 4 years later, they have dragged their heels. She still does not have full autonomy. She still is not allowed to see patients for nothing that she's done, but she's had to go through hoops and threats just to get under a new superior where she still has not been credentialed.
Is that part of this appeal?
That's not part of this. It is and it isn't. It's the reason why she's seeking this relief and why it's important to her to say that they did something wrong to her. Not that there was just insufficient evidence that she was to find her removal, but there is more than that. That they violated Congress's mandate to retaliate against whistleblowers. And as I was going to say also, that in the decision cited by the government, the reason why they found that there was mootness is because they said, well, the person resigned and it wasn't a termination decision and this is just not going to happen again. There's just no risk of this reasonably happening again. That's not the case here. The case here is that it is happening again. It could happen again, and she should be given the affirmative decision of corrective action as a whistleblower. And that's why we're here.
Even though, trying to look at it, you haven't quantified any compensatory damages. As far as the record shows, there is no gap in pay and back pay. It certainly, I agree, it does look as if they were not particularly enthusiastic about returning her to the position or a similar position. But in terms of gaps for what happened, without any quantification of what she's looking for, it looked as if what you're asking, declaration, yes, she's a whistleblower, or yes, she's associated with a whistleblower, it's not at all clear what this can conceivably accomplish. And I came away with this record looking at the primary role of this appeal is the attorney fee aspect of whistleblowing. And whether if you are a whistleblower, there is more of a tilt towards payment of attorney's fees. Is that accurate? You haven't mentioned attorney's fees.
That is something that we would contend she is entitled to if she prevails and in this case and is found jurisdiction, along with in the 2012 amendment, there was two different categories of recovery. One, they did mention attorney fees, and then separately, they mentioned compensatory damages. And one of the compensatory damages that's stated in the 2012 amendment is that costs as well. So that's differentiated from attorney fees. But yes, to answer your question, she would be seeking attorney fees.
But you've never said what money she lost and was not restored. And from the record, it looks as if the agency tried to be meticulous in assuring that, as far as money was concerned, she was made whole.
One of the contentions that she raised was that she did not get full back pay. And the MSPB judge determined that she hadn't met that burden of proof of proving she didn't get back pay.
But again, and you didn't appeal that part. You did not appeal that part of the board's decision below.
Well, we are seeking compensatory damages, and that would fall within compensatory damages as well.
But do you understand that that was a clear issue of controversy below? You know, whether back pay was in fact provided, and the AJ found that your side hadn't made the case for there being any missing back pay, and then you had an opportunity with this appeal, with this vehicle, to challenge that finding by the board, and you know you chose not to make that appeal. So why we're a little bit stuck now with trying to revisit an issue that has essentially been waived and forfeited by you not having appealed that portion of the board's decision.
I understand. And
so that's why I feel like back pay is off the table.
That was not the focus of our briefing. Our focus is that she wants corrective action to be a whistleblower and then have another hearing for her to make claims for compensatory damages and attorney fees. So that's correct. You are correct that was not, you know, set forth.
Right. So, so we're a little stuck. We're off the table on that. What would be the compensatory damages? You've said the term compensatory damages, but I have no idea what that actually means. What list of things could that be? Other than back pay.
Well, we would make one for her costs, two, make a claim that she's entitled to emotional damages, and three, it would open the door for her to make a claim for front pay, given the fact that she's arguing that she is a whistleblower. And I'm not making any sort of affirmation on the record here what she intends to do, but that could be an option for her for front pay, given the fact that you know, it's her contention that she is a whistleblower and that this is still ongoing.
I'm sorry, I don't know what front pay is. Can you explain that? I know what back pay is. I don't know what front pay is.
Front pay could potentially be a claim for her to make if she's saying that I have been retaliated against and can no longer be here, and that's some sort of constructive claim that that I should be entitled to future payment instead of, you know, having to endure working here. Now, I want to make clear, because she's still employed there, she's not, you know, seeking to leave right now, and she may not make that claim, but that's something that would be afforded to her as well.
All right, let's hear from the government, and we'll save your rebuttal time. Mr. Edelstein.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The VHA removed Ms. Mogadam for poor performance, not because of any whistleblower activity. But before we get to the merits, there is a mootness issue that looms large in this case. This case is unusual in that Ms. Mogadam was restored to her position on the recommendation of an administrative board, known as the DAB, and she's still working at the VHA today. So what relief can she meaningfully obtain in this IRA appeal? Well, at the MSPB, as has been discussed, she only requested back pay, but the board found a failure of proof on that issue, and she does not challenge the board's back pay finding in this court. So what's left? Ms. Mogadam argues that she's entitled to request other relief under the whistleblower statute, and she mentions compensatory damages and attorney's fees. Well, sure, she was entitled to request those things before the board, but our point is that she did not actually request any of that relief before the board. There's no bifurcation of liability.
Were attorney's fees requested before the board?
Nope. No, Your Honor. They were not.
Is it part and parcel with a successful IRA appeal to the board that if you prevail on your whistleblower action that you, under some statute, are entitled to attorney's fees automatically? Is there anything like that?
No, Your Honor. It's not automatic. You're certainly entitled to request it, but a request has to be made. And throughout the entire 2 years of administrative proceedings before the board, there was not one request for any form of relief, not compensatory damages, not consequential damages, not attorney's fees. The only thing that was requested was the back pay, which has now been waived.
But why should a request for attorney's fees be barred at any point? She went through 4 years of up and down, all sorts of issues and events that are barely outlined in the record before us, and this is the last stop. Why can't she request attorney's fees now?
Well, it's too late, Your Honor, because that was a request that needed to be made before the board.
Why is it too late?
And there's no longer any substantive relief left. So if it's just the attorney's fees that's the only remaining issue, this court's decision in Tunick holds that an interest in attorney's fees is not sufficient to create a case or controversy when there's no other substantive relief that can be awarded. And this court affirmed a dismissal on mootness grounds in Tunick versus MSPB in 2005, cited in the briefs.
Counselor, what happens if we affirm today? Does that end all litigation here, all the moving pieces?
It does for this appeal. However, I should point out that there is still pending at the board, because there was a lack of a quorum for many years, that there's many cases that are still pending before the MSPB. And Ms. Mogadam, her first OSC complaint ripened into an MSPB appeal, and it was dismissed for lack of jurisdiction by the board judge, and there's a pending appeal before the full board that has not yet been resolved. The issues largely subsumed within the same ones that were litigated in this case, but nonetheless, your Honor's question was, would this end everything between, right? And the answer is no.
Are you saying that's the place to request attorney's fees?
Well, Your Honor, if she wanted attorney's fees in this action, she should have requested them in this action.
If the statute entitles you to attorney's fees, why does it have to be pleaded?
Your Honor, you're entitled to seek them under the statute, but you have to seek them.
That isn't the words of the statute. Statute doesn't say you can ask for them. You can always ask for attorney's fees.
Sure. And
the statute doesn't say that. The statute says whistleblowers are entitled to attorney's fees.
And Ms. Mogadam is no whistleblower, Your Honor. On the merits.
There are decisions that she is a whistleblower. There are decisions that she's not. Decisions that she is.
Not a one, Your Honor. There is no decision that Ms. Mogadam is a whistleblower. The administrative board that restored her to her position restored her because they found that the removal was not warranted. Whistleblowing was...
Because she wasn't a whistleblower.
No,
it's a question
no,
of the issue of whistleblowing was always there.
If I may, Your Honor, whistleblowing was not an issue before the DAB. The DAB has no jurisdiction to consider whistleblower issues. It considered only whether the specifications of poor performance had been proven to its satisfaction.
And her response was that because of her association with a known whistleblower, that was a factor in the treatment she received.
That was not the issue before the DAB. The issue before the DAB was whether the 6 specifications had been proven.
Are you saying the briefs misstate that position?
I guess you're saying in front of the MSPB, yes, this whole whistleblower activity question was front and center.
Yes.
But in front of this other board, the disciplinary board, the DAB, there was nothing, that whole inquiry had nothing to do with her whistleblowing activity. It solely had to do with whether the
the decision to remove her was sound based on the specifications that were alleged for poor performance.
Precisely, Your Honor.
And the DAB said, no, we don't really think these specifications are adequately articulated, or maybe there's some findings that are missing. And that's why they overturned the removal decision. But here in front of us is this parallel proceeding in front of the board, which is about alleged retaliation for whistleblowing activity.
That's right, Your Honor, exactly. And without any substantive relief left that's been preserved for appeal, this case should be dismissed as moot. But even if
this is an appeal from the MSPB, is it not?
It is, Your Honor. It is. And this case needs to have a case for controversy under Article 3, and that's the issue. Is that the only relief she sought was back pay. She did not appeal the adverse back pay findings, and she didn't seek anything else. That's why this case is now moot. But even if the court...
But we're creating a situation that no employee can decipher and cope with. We have this agency and that agency, and unless you do everything just as we, at the last step, said you should have done, you're not entitled to come into court.
How hard is it, Your Honor, to simply ask for the relief that you're seeking? That's all we're saying, Your Honor. It was not requested, and it's not been preserved for appeal.
Aren't you also saying that there's no finality in this case? I mean, if we affirm, does that render final the MSPB action? And you said no.
Well, it would still be pending. I suppose that to the extent there is factual overlap between the two cases, there may be a lawyer arguing someday in the future about collateral estoppel or some, you know, overlapping issue, but I have not studied that.
You're saying Ms.
I can't speak to
Ms.
that.
Ms. Moganen filed two different IRA appeals at the board.
Yes.
One of them is before us today.
Yes.
One of them is still pending at the board.
Yes.
Because due to the board's lack of a quorum for all these years, it's been just sitting there lurking at the board. And so in that sense, anything that Ms. Moganen wants to fight over won't be completely over if this appeal were to be affirmed, because she still has this still pending IRA appeal lurking at the board in a parallel action.
Then why are we hearing this? If there's really no finality here, why are we here?
That's
you may not be the right person to ask that.
That's the thrust of our mootness argument, Your Honor. Why are we here? There's no substantive relief left to be awarded.
It's not moot. I mean, there's no controversy. There's no finality here.
Well, there was a board decision that Ms. Moganen was not a whistleblower, and that the board had shown by clear and convincing evidence that it removed her because of poor performance, not because of any whistleblower activity. And presumably, Ms. Moganen has a right to appeal that decision. I don't take issue with that, but nonetheless, Article 3 remains, and there needs to be a case or controversy. And that's the thrust of our mootness argument.
There is some confusion here in the sense that, when Ms. Moganen felt that she was mistreated by her employing agency, the VA, there are all these different routes she can take. She can go to the MSPB. She can go to this other tribunal called the DAB, the Disciplinary Appeal Board, and she went both. And then the Disciplinary Appeal Board said one thing, and then the MSPB ultimately said another thing. In terms of...
Two different things, though, Your Honor.
The soundness of the removal decision. And so it just administratively looks confusing.
Well, Ms. Moganen does disagree with the board's finding that the DAB decision was not entitled to much probative weight. They did decide two different things. about the strength of the agency's evidence. But the board found that the DAB decision in this case was poorly reasoned, poorly explained, and it was inconsistent with the evidence that was actually before that tribunal. And this standard of review that this court applies, if it reaches the merits, does not allow this court to reweigh the probative value of the DAB decision. She pursued extensively any and all litigation avenues available to her. No one begrudges her of that, but by the same token, there has to be a case or controversy, and there isn't one here. The VA, just finally, I just want to put it out there that the VA did not discriminate against Ms. Mogadam or retaliate against her because of any protected activity. Ms. Mogadam's supervisor, Dr. Sohn, testified before the board credibly that Ms. Mogadam started, quote, on a clean slate, unquote, without regard for whatever happened in the past. And Dr. Sohn testified that she genuinely wanted Ms. Mogadam to succeed. She worked extensively with Ms. Mogadam to try and train her and help her, meeting with her daily. And yet Ms. Mogadam was unable to handle more than 9 out of the usual 25 patients that she was supposed to be responsible for.
Yeah, so those are strong findings. This is the MSPB administrative judge whose findings you're repeating. My understanding from other cases is that during these many years of the absence of a quorum of board members, that the rulings of the administrative judge could become final. But from what you have said today, you don't agree with that?
Your Honor, I'm not sure I follow your question, but I will try. The decision of the board, the administrative judge in this case, became final because there was no appeal to the full board. There was no petition for review.
There was no full board to appeal to.
Well, she could have lodged a petition for review, and it would have sat there like her first board appeal, where she did.
It was in her favor.
No, it dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. There's no decision in favor of Ms. Mogadam on any whistleblower issue in existence. It doesn't exist, Your Honor. And for these reasons, the court should dismiss this appeal as moot or affirm the well-reasoned decision of the board. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I'll hear rebuttal.
Yes, I would like to just comment on the DAB and the MSPB decision and how we argue this should come together. I think we need to take a step back here and just think of what the MSPB judge concluded here. The agency had an exceptionally high burden of clear and convincing evidence, their burden to prove that they would have removed her absent of the prima facie finding of whistleblowing. Yet, internally, by subject matter experts, unanimously, she was returned to work. So it's very difficult for us to comprehend how the MSPB judge concluded that there was clear and convincing evidence of her removal when she's still working there. And that is an egregious finding for us. And it is a dangerous decision that will chill whistleblowers. And I think that counsel made a very good point here, to the point that I was making before. There's been no finding that she has been a whistleblower. And Congress has clearly set forth a mandate for strong public policy decisions that there needs to be protections for whistleblowers.
Are you asking us for some sort of declaration that she's a whistleblower?
We're not asking for a declaration. We're asking for the board's own corrective finding that she was terminated because she was a whistleblower. That's what we're asking for. A couple of points that I would like to comment as well with regards to the Tunick decision, which was made in 2005. Before there was an amendment to the WPA in 2012 clearly setting forth in addition to attorney fees, compensatory damages. So there's no case that they cited since the amendment, since the compensatory damages was added there about mootness. And at the same time, Tunic...
You could have argued attorney's fees below. And we started this dialogue with you, with my asking you, what are you looking for? What's your relief? And you didn't even say attorney's fees then. You didn't. And you said compensatory damages. And now you're asking us to make declarations on facts, and you're asking us to resurrect or to establish some sort of claim for attorney's fees that you yourself haven't even asserted until now.
What we're asking.
This is a situation that looks like, you understand the term, blown by your own petard, right?
I understand that perception of this. What we're arguing is that it could not have been envisioned by Congress to simply let agencies off the hook by having, you know, an internal review board send someone back to work and find that there's no, you know, whistleblowing. That could not have been the intent of Congress in this case. With regards to attorney fees, to clarify, we, in addition to compensatory damages, she will be seeking attorney fees, and she does not have to claim attorney fees until 30 days after there's a finding of jurisdiction in this case. So that we disagree with the government's contention that was waived. They were not able to cite to any sort of authority saying that that's not the case, and that's how I've always understood that this has to proceed. Once there's a jurisdiction, then you go to damages and recovery.
The board never found jurisdiction here?
No, the board never found jurisdiction here because the court sustained the government's affirmative defense that they would have removed her irrespective of the prima facie evidence of whistleblowing. There was never a finding of jurisdiction.
I thought in order to make that kind of a finding, they have to find that they have jurisdiction to make such a finding.
Well, the jurisdiction, they have to find that she had a prima facie evidence of whistleblowing, which the MSPB judge did in this case, and then have to find that the agency did not meet its high burden of clear and convincing evidence that it would have done so.
I guess I'm just
anyway.
Saying that sounds more like an overall ultimate merits determination rather than an underlying jurisdiction determination.
In most courts, that is the case, but not with the MSPB. And it was determined that the term jurisdiction in MSPB means you have to find those merits assessments. So no, she did not find jurisdiction in this case. I'll also...
Just, it's still not clear to me. Your position, you generally accept that there is still an outstanding appeal from the administrative judge to the full board available?
I believe that there could be. However, the reason that we're here is she is seeking corrective action that she was a whistleblower. And a good question that was asked to the government was, well, is this over? And another way to look at this is, no, this is far from over, because as I indicated, she still could bring claims that she was a whistleblower based on other personal actions that have since occurred, which is why she's here. She believes that has happened. She's still being retaliated against, and that's why she's seeking this relief, which we believe she's entitled to by congressional intent.
Okay. Any more questions? Yeah. Any more questions for counsel? Okay, thank you. Thanks to both counsel.
Thank you very much.
Fully presented. The case is taken under submission, and that concludes this panel's argued cases for this morning.